This is KSL's Religion Today, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. I am thrilled to be here in studio with some filmmakers. We have Stephen Gray, director, Tyler Friesen, executive director, several others in studio in connection with a new film that is coming out in studios on October 27th called After Death. I'm very excited about this because it involves near-death experiences. Gentlemen, welcome to our studios today.
Hey, thanks so much for having us on.
Thank you very much.
This film is by far and away, as we were talking about before we started here, the best thing that has ever been done on near-death experiences. It is just, it is superb. How did this film come about? Tell us the story about how this came to be.
Well, first of all, you know, thank you so much for that. You know, really humbled to hear that. So this whole project kind of came to be as, you know, I've been a filmmaker for about 15 years. A lot of my work has been in commercial work. But in 2012, my brother-in-law was killed by a drunk driver. And that kind of caused me to ask lots of questions about, you know, the reality of life after or heaven and what that looked like. And I wasn't sure that I really believed in that at that time. And so I actually heard an audio recording of a doctor who he had fallen two stories and cracked his head open and had a near-death experience. And this audio interview, you know, the things that he's describing gripped me in a way I think like nothing else had. And I was just like, I need to know more. And it was also just like personal motive. You know, I want to know through this grieving process, you know, where is my brother-in-law Marco? Where is he now? Does he still exist? And am I going to see him again? So, you know, I read something like 30 books, including a lot of the people who were in the film. And there was something interesting about, you know, this chorus of people's stories and that it's not just one account, that there's all of these different accounts. And I mean, I went out and watched, you know, everything I could get my hands on having to do with near-death experiences. But there was still something compelling me to kind of go after and use my abilities to kind of tell a story that had this layering and this cinematic approach to the film.
So how did you and Tyler meet up to do this?
Well, that's a fun one. He was my boss in the commercial world. So we were doing projects for him. He was working in the hometown that I'm from, and I have a small production studio there. So I do photo, video, everything we can get our hands on as filmmakers from smaller communities. It's you have your hands in everything. So I was over delivering hard drives to Steve and asked him about his projects that he has on, because he's a filmmaker, creative, fun to chat with, that little brief work interaction that we get. And he starts describing this project. I've had an abnormal amount of friends and people I love die before I was out of high school. So I had well over nine between suicides, car crashes, drowning, all of that. So the moment he starts telling me about these NDEs, and I come from a faith background as well, it's like an arrow to the heart, right? So then I said, before I left his office, I said, if there's any way to get involved, I'm in. Whether it's finance, whatever, help on set, whatever it is, I'm in. And he's like, oh yeah, great, great, cool. You know, going, yeah, it's just another guy talking, you know, being really excited with me. But before I left, I really, really meant it. It's one of those, it's the biggest question, right? Like, it's the biggest question in life is what happens when we leave here.
It is the biggest question. Yeah. And one of the comments at the premiere last night was about that. And the description was that it ties the afterlife into this life and gives this life context.
Yeah.
So how did this film coalesce? How did you decide from this concept to the actual film and get the people involved that you did?
I mean, it's really years in the making. So I've been working on this thing since 2016. And when we got, you know, greenlit with Tyler Friesen and the other executive producers involved in the project, we, you know, really kind of started production early 2020. You know, and so the idea is, you know, might be naive, but looking back on it now, but we thought this would be so simple. You know, we're going to film this, you know, round of interviews over a course of a couple months. Everyone's going to fly into us, you know, very simple kind of setup. And the narrative recreations were always in place and storyboarded and all that kind of stuff. And then COVID hits, right? The whole world shuts down. And then to complicate things, you know, every film production experienced delays and you know, halts in production and stuff like that. We wanted to forge forward because time was, for us, it was like, this story needs to be told. You know, it's a burning passion of all of ours. And so we forged ahead to tell that story. And but to make things complicated, we had to go where everyone was, which was a lot of different places all around the United States. And so with 20 check bags and a small crew, we flew to all of these different locations. But again, to make things even more difficult was we're interviewing doctors in some cases who are still practicing and they're heads of their departments in hospitals. And Dr. Jeffrey Long, who runs Near-Death Experience Research Foundation, he's actually an oncologist. So he's working with, you know, his patients are you know, immune, they have immune is compromised. And so they didn't even have, like, in some cases, you know, doctors or hospitals permission even that we could, you know, interview them. We had to figure all that kind of stuff out, get tested in every single place we went with the entire team, show results of all that kind of stuff, and also do interviews, you know, 15 feet away, double masked, you know, in some cases with Dr. Sabum. We had to interview him and have two cameras remotely operated from a different room, like around the corner, and still try to manage to have like a private, kind of intimate conversation, you know, almost yelling through a mask. it was a bit of a nightmare for production, but you know, we're happy we forged through because now we have this story to tell. It's going out to 2,200 screens across North America, which is amazing.
You anticipated my question. Tell people the scope of this release, and that's a huge number. Anybody who hears it will get that, but put it in context.
Yeah, so the genre of the film is actually technically a documentary, and it's because we have, you know, these interviews with real people, but the film is not a documentary. You know, it's a cinematic, you know, narrative experience. We have half the film is narrative recreations of everyone's experience. And then we also bring them to these places of what they experience, you know, heaven and hell and all these different kind of accounts and everything kind of in between, including, you know, their out-of-body experiences and all that. It was an enormous kind of undertaking, you know, visually. But, you know, the genre of documentary, 2,200 screens puts us at an all-time top 10 release in terms of, you know, theater count globally. Like, this is a big deal for a film in this genre. And it's, you know, I don't know that it's been done for a film that's been talking about near-death experiences before. It's profound.
It's extraordinary. I saw it last night at the premiere. I will tell the listening audience that this is of the same caliber, in my opinion, as Saving Private Ryan, Band of Brothers, things like that. The cinematography is fabulous. The music is wonderful. The way it's been edited to really, with precision, give people a sense of these near-death experiences, which you carefully chose, it's just extraordinary. It's definitely worth watching very much.
Oh, it's so kind of you.
Very kind. Thank you.
That's my honest opinion, and I truly believe that. So
that's great.
So let's talk a little bit about how you pick content, because I love the people you chose. It's really great. And we made a little joke beforehand about, well, you know, if you'd had a few used car salesmen or people who dropped out of high school, it might not have been quite as cool. But you've picked some extraordinary people to be in this.
Yeah, well, there was this kind of the criteria for the people that we were going to you know, go and tell their stories. You know, I had the privilege of meeting a lot of people who had near-death experiences. But for me, again, coming from a bit more of a skeptical approach in the beginning, and we also had Jason and Jens from Cypher Studios, the production team behind this film, come from an even more, you know, skeptical perspective. One of them didn't even believe that any of these stories would be true. And so it was a learning experience and a discovery, but we let that kind of come through in the film. And so the criteria was that we had to have a lot of evidence surrounding that they actually died. And so, you know, medical transcripts, first eyewitnesses, first responders, all of that kind of stuff had to stack up to prove that they actually did die, which was almost all the cases in the film, we include that. But then also, I think it was interesting to tell the story of people who actually had a lot to lose in telling their story. You know, Dr. Mary Neal, who wrote To Heaven and Back, she's in the film, and, you know, she's a spine surgeon. She has her own practice. She has no reason to go and tell this story. She doesn't need to sell books. But the story is so real, and she puts her credibility on the line in telling her story.
She does. We're speaking with the director and executive producer, Stephen Gray and Tyler Friesen, respectively, about the new film that's coming out Friday, October 27th, called After Death, It features near-death experiences. Stay tuned. We're back. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. If you have questions or comments about this episode of Religion Today, feel free to send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. And again, we're talking today with some extraordinary filmmakers about a new film, After Death, that's the best thing that I've ever seen by far about near-death experiences. During this segment of our show, we're shifting a little bit to talk about the people who are actually in the film, why they were selected, and what story they had to tell.
So we interviewed 14 different people who made it on screen, you know, more than that, who unfortunately didn't, but just for the sake of time, right? We're telling a single story. We have to carve out enough time to make the, you know, get to know the people. But 14 different people who clinically died anywhere between seconds to an hour and 45 minutes is the longest in the film. And yeah, just a variety of backgrounds, even in some cases culture. So we actually, we had the privilege of meeting and talking to Hila in Israel, who, you know, was a lawyer and had this profound near-death experience. And hearing, you know, someone from a, you know, far-reaching country, as well as three people in India, one was an atheist and two kind of grew up Hindu. Steve Kang, who grew up, was born and raised in South Korea and later immigrated into the United States. But when he was in South Korea, at that time, he's totally insulated from Western culture. They don't have televisions in homes. There's no movie theater. There's no access to like a Bible, and there's no street preachers. And so their religion was Buddhism. And so they were taught by monks in the temples, and a very different, you know, like thought and sort of like the outlook on the afterlife was completely different than what it is in the Western culture. And they, when he has this near-death experience, you know, while in the United States, you know, it almost perfectly overlaps to what people describe in their Western experiences. The same thing as in India, the same thing as Israel. And so for me, you know, it was profound to kind of go through the overlap in what they're depicting. You know, sometimes it's what they come back and interpret could be a little bit different, and sometimes culture and even maybe religion or their family and all that kind of stuff could influence that. And they're trying to make sense of what they experience. But the depictions, I mean, almost perfectly overlap. There's something like 40 descriptions, as John Berg talks about in his book, Imagine Heaven, of commonly reported near-death experiences. And I was finding for myself, having interviewed these people, you know, myself, is that, yeah, they are overlapping. This is crazy.
You could make a huge list, and the interpretations change, but the actual elements of the experience are incredibly similar in all of them. So how did you pick the people that you chose? I was fascinated to hear about some of that, but what's your criteria?
Well, again, it's just having a lot of evidence to kind of surround their death, and then focusing on people that, well, I think, you know, some of it is, you know, like maybe the way they died. Dale Black is, he had this amazing near-death experience. You know, he was brought to heaven and shown, you know, incredible things there. But he also died in a plane crash. Yeah. You know, it's a bit of a spectacle, right?
One of the things I was trying to draw out is that these are not just people who died, but who there is third-party evidence.
Very verifiable.
Documented evidence that these people all died. And that's a phenomenal thing.
Yeah, there's no denying that they died. And that's, I think that to speak to that point is matching the actual science, the medical science, especially for the skeptics, the people who believe in nothing, the atheists who don't believe there's a God. That's fair. Like, I get it, but
I've had a few discussions with the Skeptical Inquirer people,
right,
and it's pretty hard for them to
but those
say
questions,
much about this.
And those questions, I love talking to them because it's the same, like, it's an exploration. You have to find it for yourself, and you really have to seek it. So looking for those verifiably, scientifically documented very well, because there's lots of others that don't have the same science or the same type of prestige with the medical locations they were at or the professionals involved with the paperwork, right? So trying to take the skepticism to a minimum or make it at least as minimal as we possibly can through what they believe is God science, so which is that we know that's not...
I've seen some skeptics go into contortions trying to talk about Pam Reynolds.
That's so, right. Yeah.
Why don't you talk about Pam Reynolds? A lot of listeners won't know who Pam Reynolds is, but this is one of the most extraordinary stories.
Yeah, Pam Reynolds' case is fascinating because, like Dr. Sabum says in the film, it's like a lab experiment. Like, this is probably like the best kind of conditions for, you know, all the verifiable aspects of near-death experience. So she had a brain aneurysm, and she undergoes at that time a little bit of experimental surgery. It was in the late 90s in Phoenix with Dr. Robert Spetzler. And we actually had Dr. Carl Green in the film, who is also he was present during the surgery. He's also a neurosurgeon. So those two neurosurgeons who are there and during the surgery during the course of it. And it's very complicated surgery, but essentially, you know, they kill her on purpose. They drain her blood out of her brain, out of her head, and on purpose so that basically that it's like deflating a balloon in her brain. And then they're performing the surgery on the lower part of the brain stem, which is kind of a neurosurgeon's no man's land. We don't really know what we're doing there, aside from just trying to, you know, make her live from getting rid of this aneurysm. But they had to cool her body down, stop her heart. So her heart stopped. There's no brain activity. And they're measuring the brain waves during the entire course of the operation. When her brain is offline and when her heart has stopped is when she has this out-of-body experience. And it could be corroborated because what she talks about in the descriptions of what she saw, which is from the perspective of over the shoulder of the surgeon, she sees the tools and the conversations, but then she sees very specific things that happened that can later be corroborated. Like, for example, they had issues with her vein in her leg, and they had to switch from one to the other because the vein was there was an issue with the vein. It was too small, and they were fighting about this in the operating theater, and they were playing this song Hotel California, and she thought this is very insensitive. Yeah. And so she when she comes to the following day, she's relaying this to Dr. Carl Green, who is, you know, present, the one who is actually addressing her post-op care. And he was asking her, you know, when she's coming to and kind of able to speak, you know, how she's doing, how she's feeling, the typical questions. And she's talking about, you know, why is it that I saw this and I saw that, and I said, you know, and he's dumbfounded. He doesn't have words. Because, you know, the stuff that she's describing, which is, again, from a different perspective, and she's seeing angels enter the room, and she's being, you know, brought up and having this, you know, profound heavenly experience. But the stuff that she sees in the operating table is when her brain is offline, there's no blood to the brain. So the brain's not even able to produce new, you know, memory function or anything. And she's coming back. When they revived her, they had to shock her twice. And all of that detail she recalls. And when she reenters her body, you know, somehow her brain is like able to recall this information that only would have happened when her brain was completely offline. It's just perplexing. But we also have, you know, we talk about this study of, I think it was 27 patients who had near-death experiences who were blind. And 14 of that group were blind from birth. Now, I didn't know this before making the film. People who are blind from birth don't have visual dreams. So they just have audible dreams, which I can't imagine literally because I only have visual dreams. And so they don't have that kind of, you know, they don't understand what that is that they're missing even, right? So and then they also don't know what darkness is or light. There's just no perception of anything visual. And yet they have these near-death experiences and have this visual component of it, right?
For the first time.
And they find it disturbing. Because it's more than just that one extra sense, is all these other senses, but part of it is visual, and they're relaying all that visual information that can be corroborated back, and yet their eyes don't work and they can't see when they come back to their body.
Quite fascinating.
There's some scientists that are trying to create new terminology now to try and rectify how that happens. One of them is non-local consciousness. Somehow, you know, the idea is that the brain can produce itself from outside of itself, 30 feet away, maybe go to a different room. Somehow the brain can do that. It just doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah. When you've explored all the other possibilities, the one that makes the most sense is the one that this is actually the real deal.
Yeah,
absolutely. Before we run out of time, where can people see this? Tell us about how many theaters again. The movie is After Death. It's extraordinary.
So After Death hits theaters October 27th. It begins playing in theaters. And it's going to be multiple showings a day. Hopefully we play for a long time in theaters. But get your tickets at angel.com/afterdeath. You can also on that page find out where to see it. And you find your local theater. And we hope many people come to see it. Because as an independent film, you know, especially the first opening weekend, that's like the perfect opportunity to kind of tell the industry, oh, there is demand for these stories.
If you're going to go soon.
It's important. Yeah. Go in the first week, please.
Yes. Gentlemen, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you here. Director Stephen Gray, executive producer Tyler Friesen, thank you so much for being on Religion today.